This is the Living Fearless Today podcast, a show that helps men like you and me who are struggling to get unstuck and overcome fear to live confidently and courageously. I'm your host and transformation coach, Mike Forrester, helping you create the change you want now. Join me as I interview men who've conquered their challenges and soared to success as they spill their secrets on how they live fearless today. Well, hello and welcome back, my friend. And this week, I am absolutely stoked to be sitting here with Stephen Neff. Now, Stephen was just an absolutely amazing host, had me on his podcast, Steps to Sobriety. It was about 6 months ago, and I think it was episode like 326. Go check it out. Stephen is such a phenomenal host. And just loved our time. He has become a fantastic friend. And just one of those guys that you know has your back, is going to be open about where things really are, so you don't feel like you have to have that Pinterest kind of life and go, hey, Stephen, I'm couching this because I don't want to be judged. Stephen's the real deal. And super encouraging. Okay, why are you laughing at me, man? I'm like being honest about you, bro.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm just thinking about the Pinterest, and I'm sort of thinking, what filters shall I put on? What kind of which is my good side? I don't even know.
I'm like, Stephen, you're killing me, Smalls. No, Stephen is an amazing guy. So he has gone through moving from Germany to the UK. He's now in New Zealand. So there's a lot of change, transition physically in life. But there's also been, as he was a doctor and working through addiction and now going through, you know, like he's also gone through trauma. I mean, now he's anesthetist. There's the word. I'm like anesthesiologist. I'm like, I'll get it right.
You're doing ever so well. You're doing ever so well, man.
So he's an anesthetist, has two boys, living in New Zealand. So, you know, he's jumping out of helicopters, doing skiing and all kinds of things. Yeah, he's living a high life. You can tell he and I have a lot of fun when we chat. So it is always a joy to talk with Stephen. How are you doing today, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing ever so well. Thank you very much for that beautiful introduction. Some of it was even close to the truth, so I like it. Although flattery gets you far. I mean, just keep coming. That is good.
I wouldn't flatter you if I didn't believe it, my friend.
No, no. Well, first of all, we both have this aerodynamic haircut that makes us just already two peas out of a pot, isn't it? Come on, man. As far as the helicopter skiing is concerned, well, I'm driving a Toyota Estima 2007. So it's a people mover. That gives you pretty much the idea. I'm not your classic doctor in a Porsche. Okay. So I'm sorry, brother. No, that will never be me, but I am a doctor and I am an anesthetist. Anesthetist is in the English speak, is anywhere but America, is the same as an anesthesiologist. Although anesthetists typically go through 7 years of training. I think anesthesiology training is 4 years in the United States. So that's about it. Otherwise we are the dudes who are, there for you when you go through a hard time. Let that be when you are having surgery, elective surgery or trauma surgery. Let's say, we are a little bit like the SAS or the SEAL team in a hospital, where essentially whenever somewhere hits the fan, you call the anesthetist. Let it be a really sick little baby, or let it be a pregnant woman screaming for an epidural. Let it be someone who is so sick that they need intensive care. That's the role of the anesthetist. So that is what I do. That's what I love. And that's what I specialize in. Yes, I come from Germany. Beautiful, beautiful place. Should you ever wish to go, I studied in Heidelberg. But in 1989, when I came out of university, the wall had just come down. And you could get a doctor to mow your lawn, because there were too many of us after the wall came down. So I very quickly ended up in the UK. Found Mrs. Wright, married her, emigrated to New Zealand. So I basically got all the big life events that are traumas in their own right. I got them out of the way within 2 years, 3 years. Oh, there were so many other events there, though, that really didn't set me up really to win. There was a lot of trauma in my younger years, that really led me to have some really screwed up core beliefs. And unfortunately, I was the victim of a gang assault when I was 13. I thereafter went straight into becoming Rambo. I put the gang leader behind bars. He threatened to kill me once he gets out. Kind of stuff that you see in a film. That was my real life. So I started training martial arts, and basically the next 5 years were pure darkness. But I became Rambo. I became a physical specimen to reckon with. And that was, I guess, a nice side. Having said that, mentally, that was before PTSD was even invented. So it was just hard times. And then I went to university in a different town before the internet. So I figured that guy will never find me. So I was starting to relax a bit. More importantly, I found alcohol. And I still remember to this day, we were sitting in a beer garden. In the summer, under a huge oak, incredibly romantic setting, sun was shining, everything was there, with two friends. And we had a big stein of beer, which is sort of a liter of beer as a vessel. And most of it was already gone, on a Saturday, early Saturday afternoon. And suddenly this wave of happiness washed over me. And I heard a strange sound, and it was my own laughter. I had not had a belly laughter. I don't know for how long. And I still get goosebumps now, even talking about it. It was just such an overpowering feeling of joy, of love, of everything. And of course, my brain immediately hooked onto that and said, wow, what's that? Where did that come from? Okay, there's sunshine, there is friends, and there is, there's beer. Ooh. And that was such a link, such a memory. Wow. And unfortunately, then I was obviously quite shy. During the assault, I had my front teeth knocked out, and they don't fix your teeth permanently when you're a junior, when you're a teenager. So for 5 years, I had sort of things falling out of my mouth, some temporary teeth that fell out. And it was hard, because obviously I was not laughing. I was not there. And then suddenly my teeth were fixed. I felt safe. I got drunk. It was beautiful with being drunk. I was disinhibited. I was going out there. That new me was the not the center of the party, but was the reliable, funny wingman of the center of the party. So I had good friends, and as a team, we were unbeatable. And it was beautiful. Boy, did we have a time. But I was now escaping my reality. I was now escaping the pressures, very effectively, may I say. So alcohol was initially a true friend. But then, of course, this was the only friend I had. And once life continued to pile on trauma after trauma after trauma, at some stage, this escaping the reality, well, it's not really working so well. And I think that was the trap I fell into. This was the time before, or when just sort of the self-improvement kind of stuff came out. So I pretty much read all the books, the early books, How to Swim with the Sharks, sort of more business related, and then also self-improvement, but always did so with a glass of wine in my hand. So I read it, but then didn't take action. So that was the typical me. So I had the Tony Robbins tapes, and I listened to them. I thought, oh yeah, great, that's good stuff, whilst I slurped my wine. Okay. Life has got ways of humbling you, and it had a lot of ways of humbling me, a lot of trauma. And I just did what I always did. I escaped reality. And during the day, I did so by working too hard. I think I was a workaholic long before I was an alcoholic. So workaholic first, then alcoholic. And the mean thing is the alcohol gave me always a second wind. So here I was working freaking 14 hours a day, nonstop. And then I came home tired, stress at home. I would drink and suddenly get the second wind. And 10 o'clock at night, great, let's clean up the garage. Or let's listen to music or whatever. I was burning the candle on both ends and in the middle. So it's really, really hard. And it was a very boom and bust life that I lived. Go, 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 crash. Go, 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 crash. And that was my life. I achieved a tremendous amount. I was definitely a high functioning alcoholic. No two ways around that. I collected a lot of alphabet soup things behind my name. And I guess I can be proud of that, but that all comes with a price. Was I there for my wife when she needed it? Probably not. Was I there for my children when they were young? Definitely not. So I paid a high price for my emotional lack of knowledge, for my emotional, I was like a toddler, for crying out loud, from an emotional perspective. Yet here I was, the man who was achieving one accolade after the other in his professional life. So it was a bizarre, schizophrenic way of living my life. So very strange. The whole insecurities in my life continued throughout that time. The imposter syndrome, I think that was riding me left, right, and center. So strange times.
And I think we can, that's like a common thing. If we look at the fact of feeling insecure or unworthy, man, we're looking for something to validate and almost be like that certificate of worth that signs off and says, yep, you got your man card. You're everything that, you know, nobody has validated you for.
Absolutely.
And those decisions we make, just like, you know, you're talking about with your wife and your children. Yeah, it has consequences. Those can be the areas. It can be our health. It can be our mental health, our relationships outside of that. So yeah, when we're looking to make those kinds of actions and decisions, it's a trade-off. We may feel, just like with the alcohol, you talked about it making you feel more alive, you know, removing inhibitions, shyness, stuff like that. It will help in certain areas, but then, man, it's like a raging just tidal wave that comes after us in negative aspects of it. And that's a common thing, but we, I think we mask it, right? We ignore it just to say, hey, you know, just like when you were talking about the first time you had it, you know, there is still this emotional and mental attachment to that situation because it was like, wow, this is so different. It's almost like a golf game, right? Hey, I hit this ball, acted super well. The rest of the other 17 holes were trash, but there's the hope for that one hit on one hole that carries us. Only problem is, golf is, you know, more innocuous, right? It doesn't have the same consequences. Our consequences with alcohol and behavior and decisions are weightier. So, you know, you're making this progress. You're getting the accolades. How did things continue to move forward from there? I mean, you said you were a high-functioning alcoholic, but you had like that trauma that was still, you know, in your backpack, kind of, you know, following you around. How did things continue to progress from there?
Well, more trauma came. The initial trauma, that the gang assault, certainly set me up with core beliefs that were probably not so healthy. Basically, I'm alone. There's no one out there who will help me. It's all up to me. I need to be strong. I need to be Rambo. I'm the survivor. And any time when there was weakness, that was not acceptable. So this was an example of a core belief that really set me back and probably prevented me seeking help at a much earlier stage. But life continued with trauma. I got my parents out here from Germany. Within a short time, my stepfather was diagnosed with leukemia, and he rotted away over a period of 12 to 18 months. During that time, my mother developed breast cancer, but hid it from me and for everyone else. So by the time she finally opened up, it was incurable. So she then rotted away. I had bought them a house that completely overstretched me financially. And then we had a bit of a downturn here in our financial situation. So there were multiple pressures leading up to it. And ultimately, yes, that is just there was not enough alcohol to numb me anymore. There was no, the alcohol didn't do the job anymore, and I drank more and more and more. And yeah, it was sometimes the only time when I could cry. So there was still these huge emotional blocks there. I'm a man. I have to be strong, kind of, you know? And it is, yeah, I did not seek the help. Was I offered help? Was I offered hope? With hindsight, I am not sure, because when you're in the darkness, you sometimes don't see that others want to help you. And that was hard. So I still am torn to say, hey, no one helped me. I don't think that was true, but I can't actually put my fingers on, where people stepped out to be there by my side. Ultimately, it all came to a crunch one night when I was completely drunk and sitting in my garage, bawling my eyes out. Don't know what to do. Probably barely anyone could understand me. And my wife went behind my back, got the boss of the hospital, got him around at 10 o'clock at night, and he saw me in all my glory. And that was a Tuesday night. And next morning I woke up and was sort of barely able to remember what was going on. And my family came in. And was my two teenage boys at that time, and my wife. They all came down, laid down with me on the bed, and said, "Hey, look, we're looking out for you. We have organized a 1 month stint in the hospital, in a hospital up north, so away from where I was. And it was a specialized rehabilitation hospital. And this Friday morning, we're going to drive down there." You have nothing to say about that. We have canceled all your clinics. You have got leave from hospital. Everything is taken care of. We're gone. And that was the hardest thing I've ever done. Hands down, absolutely. Because it was actually, there was a relief there when people did that for me, when my family did that for me. And it was a strange thing. It was just sort of a deer caught in the headlights. So Friday we were driving up there, and you are basically, when you're going as an inpatient, you're a voluntary inmate. But you sign the contract, and that means initially 14 days where you don't get any outside contact. You don't have a phone. You're not allowed to leave, etc. So you're basically an inmate, and we called ourselves that. And it was the most scary, but also the most beautiful thing, because there were so many people there who were as hurt, as broken, as me, some worse, some less. But there were also a lot of people there who were looking after us. And after a few days, I figured out that every single one who was of them who were looking after us had been in our shoes before. every single one of them had been addicts and are now having their life sorted in a different way. And that was the amazing thing to actually, I was absolutely stunned to figure that out, that the yoga instructor was previously turning up drunk to yoga sessions as the thing in her previous life, that the nurses had troubles. Everyone was, bar two doctors there. So that really, really surprised me. The second Saturday, the boss of the rehab hospital took me out. Come on, we're going to have a coffee. I want you to meet someone. And we drove a little while and was we had this coffee. And then suddenly one of my colleagues walked in. And this colleague, I had organized conferences and I had invited him as a speaker. So I thought, oh, this guy got his together. Turns out he was a recovering addict. He had trouble with drugs previously. And I thought, that is interesting. I was blown away. And then the boss of the hospital said, hey, I come back in 3/4 of an hour. You guys have a chat. And I suddenly began to realize that I'm not the only one who has gone through some nasty stuff, and that there are others who have struggled, but there are also many others who have started on a path that I only could begin to imagine, but they had walked it. And that was powerful. That was so powerful. But initially, I was still caught up in my own poor me, look what happened to me. And a lot of trauma happened to me, please. And much of it, really independent of any of my choices. You could say, oh, you're an alcoholic. Sure, you brought it all upon yourself. Well, sorry, I didn't cause that cancer of my parents. I didn't cause that economic downturn. I didn't cause, you know, all these kind of things. Life gave me some rather big lemons there, but, I had not yet acquired the skill to actually make lemonade out of it. So I was so much still in that victim modality, and I was reveling in it like a mud in pick, like a pick in mud even.
Well, I want to step back to something you said, because I know from my experience, I thought I was the only one struggling with the stuff I was in. Hmm. Is that what I'm hearing as well, Stephen? Okay.
So, of course. I mean, if, give you an example. There was one organization that I felt had really done me wrong. And I was about that, full of anger, resentment. And so my case manager asked me, write a letter to that organization. And I did. And I wrote the whole night. I wrote the next day. I came along here, papers in hand, clenching the fist. Now, let me tell you what they did. And she took the papers, looked at them, folded them up, put them to the side and said, let's talk about you. And I said, but they have done. They look what they have done to me. And I was angry with her. And that was the beginning when I realized, actually, hang on. Because then she gave me a book to read. And it was written, by a woman who in the first 15 pages of the book describes how she came home on a Saturday morning. Her estranged husband was there with her father and her children. And he began to basically decapitate them in front of her in the driveway, before killing himself. And I read that. And I thought, I can't compete with that. And it was literally that thought, that kind of competition, that kind of wow. And it suddenly something broke in me. And I realized I'm not the only one. I'm not the only guy who has got actually trauma. And that was the biggest breakthrough. Mm-hmm. I was no longer focused on me, because so far addiction, and living an addicted life, you're very isolated. You stay all within yourself and you tell yourself lies, or the alcohol tells lies, or the PTSD, the depression tells lies. And you think you're the only one. Plus then there is the shame and guilt, and you have this denial. No, there's nothing wrong with me. Look at John over there. Now, he is a pisshead. I mean, him, definitely. But me, I'm just a social drinker. You know, it's those kind of, crazy thinking.
Yeah. And yet, in our own circle, in our own thoughts, we normalize it. And it keeps us in like this prison. That and the anger, right? I mean, it's not until we forgive others and forgive ourselves, which isn't just like a snap of the fingers. I mean, that's a long process to get there and work through. But it's like, man, thinking I'm alone in this. And then, you know, like when we're talking about like that whole lone wolf aspect, you know, like the thought processes and kind of the stuff you had done to insulate yourself, right, from the pain and the gang violence. Man, when we're just isolated, that stuff, it's almost given like nitrous oxide and it just fuels. It's like miracle grow, right? Those things become the vines that grow into other areas of our life and hold us captive until we start cutting things. It's like a jungle of emotions. So as you've gone like to rehab, right, for the alcoholism, and you're seeing others, even people you know, like how does that begin to impact your day to day? Because I mean, they said, hey, you go off, you take care of this. You've then got to be preparing to go back to work as well and go back to your family. I mean, how do things kind of move forward as you're realizing it's not just you?
There was another kick in the not so nice areas of your body. Because here you are, you're basically 4 weeks isolated, but in a really good way. You're in the safe bubble where you can explore your emotions, where you can learn about yourself, where you inevitably make huge progress. And there you are. After 28 days, I came out. There was a leaving party. I had a cake made for me from the team there. I felt I was the star student, because just as much as I can be very intense in throwing myself at my career, I did the same with recovery. Hey, I did it all. You know, Steph, what do you mean 12 steps? Hey, yeah, we did the first five. I've done them yesterday, kind of a thing. It was that kind of a thing. But I made huge progress. I have to say that. And I actually had a lot of breakthroughs early on in my recovery career. And then you come home and you expect rose petals and lovely sound music. Well, meanwhile, your family had the nose to the grindstone. They had no idea what was happening. They had no insights. They didn't grow. They were still the same. Oh my God, here he's coming home again. Will he continue to drink? Will he continue to be angry? Will he continue to be maybe not a great father? A lot of questions. Oh boy. And that was quite painful initially, I guess, until I realized, wow, that is what is happening. And then really you begin to make amends. And the very first thing you do, or what I did, was make living amends, meaning that you stop talking and start walking the walk, that you actually do things. I forever got annoyed with my children that they were not washing up or cleaning up, etc. Was a constant bone of contention, whatever the word is. I chose to wash up, and my family thought, what is happening here? So I was actually doing little things. I was actually walking the walk, and that was very humbling, but also very satisfying at the same token. By actually just living with integrity, because as an addict, we often hide, we manipulate, we lie, some of us steal, some of us do not nice things. So addictive behaviors can be very, very destroying towards a family, towards relationships, towards your workplace, depending on what you have done. So it is by you actually living a different life where you do the right thing when no one is watching. And that is the definition of integrity. Now that is initially quite an overpowering feeling and a beautiful feeling. And I still, to this day, it puts a smile on my face, because the inner, procrastinator is still there. Ah, come on. You don't need to wash up. You don't need to do that. Yeah. Oh, come on. You can do this interview. You don't need to get showered. Come on. Yeah, it's fine. No. You actually get up. You have a routine. You develop habits. You develop habits that you're proud of. And it is beautiful. We have got essentially so many opportunities each day. And all of us, we have got the same amount of seconds, 84,000 something seconds, or 86,400. I think that is what we figured out. These are the seconds in a day. Now, Elon Musk, any name that you aspire to or look up to, they have got the same amount of seconds in a day. So what are they doing different compared with you? And that is where I began to realize, hang on, there are huge opportunities there. And ultimately, it is said that when you surround yourself with 6 millionaires, you will become a millionaire. If you surround yourself with 6 painters, you will become a painter. If you surround yourself with 6 idiots, okay. Been there,
I've done that before.
exactly right. And these are the people that we keep around us, because it's quite nice. They are drinking as much as you and even more. So therefore you can pretend, see, it's normal. Everyone is drinking like that. And here you go. But the moment you actually surround yourself with a different bunch of people, you suddenly get different inputs and different growth, different fertilizer being added, and therefore different things start to grow in your garden. And that is beautiful. That's powerful. I love that.
Absolutely. So you talked about, like, you had misbeliefs, right? There were lies that you bought into, and those were then directing your decisions, your actions, the basic way that you're living. Mm. How did you begin to, from that point going forward, how did you begin to uncover those lies? Because I know for me, when I look back, I had to discover not only what I believed in, but also who I was. Mm. And so it's kind of like, it's almost like a string ball that's just all knotted up, and you pull a little bit, you can't make progress. You pull a little bit more. How did you go about unwinding all those lies that had been woven into your life to figure out, hey, this is a lie. This is truth.
Very good question. There is no easy answer there. It is literally, trauma comes in layers. So does healing. And you have to start with something. I mean, how do you do a journey of 10,000 miles? You put your right foot forward. Okay. So ultimately you have to make a start somewhere. And for each and every one of us, that will be different, but I encourage you to make a start. That start might be as simple as with you in the morning getting up, with you having a shower, with you having breakfast, with you learning a bit more about nutrition, with you paying attention to hydration. By doing 2-3 of these things at the same time, within a short period of time in the morning, you already ticked a lot of things off. So yourself, self-worth is already fed. And therefore, with the self-worth slowly growing within you, you then begin to get the power, experience the power of questioning some of the thoughts that are coming in your mind and evaluating if they are true or not. Number one. Maybe then ask, where did they actually come from? What is it really that you believe? And often enough, you can't do that alone. You don't know what you don't know. So therefore, that is sometimes where it is so powerful to talk to someone, and not someone you love, but actually someone who maybe is further down the road. That if you're talking about addiction, this could be a mentor in an AA program, or if you talk about hard times that you have gone through with, let's say PTSD, let's say a classic example, you are a man who has been on the tip of the spear and then walked into a machine gun and now nothing is ever the same. Well, maybe other people who have been in a similar position, who have overcome a PTSD or at least managed to deal with it and turn it maybe into a productive force rather than a destructive force. Maybe such people would be great to work with you. A coach, a psychologist, maybe a psychiatrist, whatever is, or whoever is needed to be in your life, because they will listen to what you say, but more importantly, they will listen to what you don't say and can guide you towards that. And that's exactly where I had my breakthroughs. I think the PTSD is really the one that strikes me most with hindsight, because it has been riding me for such a long time without me realizing what it was. I could recognize it in every one of my patients a mile away, yet I didn't see, I had it so reframed and so nicely packaged as a positive thing in my life that I put it aside. I said, I dealt with that. Look, I'm a man. And it was bizarre. And it really, about 5-6 years ago, a friend of mine, ex-special forces, he is working with me, and he completely derailed. And to a point that I was quite worried about him. And he was a few days off, he came back and was seemingly a different man. And he told me, hey, look, it's going to be all right now. And I thought, oh my God. Are you just about to make a permanent decision based upon temporary problems? And whilst he was sort of saying that, no, it's going to be all right, in my mind, I said, what a BS. And in my mind, I ran through a tick book list of PTSD symptoms that he displayed. And the moment I ran through it, I realized, hang on, you're describing yourself. And I thought, huh? How is that? And so first of all, that was a slap in the face, for me, a bit of a wake up call. And then he changed within a week. He was 80-90% back to his old happy self. Mm. I thought, what did you do? How, tell me more. And he had seen a coach, who was also a hypnotherapist. So she, worked with hypnosis. And I thought, okay. And I was a bit of a skeptic there. I'm still very skeptic to as a baseline. So I jumped over my shadow, went to her. After maybe 4 sessions, 3 of which included hypnotherapy, she had asked me the right questions for my brain to reveal the truth and some of the things that were happening. And it was amazing, because many of my symptoms, the negative symptoms of PTSD, went away, or were maybe down to 5% when they were previously 80% or so. So I was incredibly lucky, because I actually had this exposure to such a treatment modality that happened to work really well for me. But I was open. I was aware of what was going on, and I was willing to make a change. I was quite happy to put my money where my mouth is, and that was beautiful. So that helped me tremendously with that aspect, those kind of, the strange dreams at night. God, I still get them from now and then, once a month or so. And nothing gore, blood, etc. But I'm always in a situation where I'm out of control. And it's every single time the same thing. It's horrible. And you wake up, not sweaty like in a dream, but you wake up and say, what was that? But clearly in a negative connotation. So that is pretty much gone. The kind of flashbacks, the kind of where you're driving and suddenly you go like that, when as if someone punches you in the gut, because you remember how you talked to a girl when you were 18. And that is one. That is more than quarter of a century. That's longer ago. Yet I have got still that emotional response that comes out now, because just my brain wants to play me the worst of Stefan over the last 40 years. And that was all things. But by me exposing myself to a treatment modality, I made a big breakthrough. And that was that. So it was not there was not a big sign there. Pull that string here and the whole thing will unravel.
No,
there's no sign. There's no help. But there are, not help. There is no easy answer. But what there is opportunities for you to expand, opportunities for you. But it all starts with you to grow. You need to grow inside. Don't seek help from others. Oh, I need you to sort me out. No, you need to develop habits that make you stronger, make you more resilient, make you more at peace with yourself. You need to learn to look in the mirror without any filters and actually look into your eyes and say, okay, there were times that you were a real beep. And there are other times when actually you should be proud of yourself. And we are so good at beating ourselves up. We should come standard with a whip and we can whip ourselves stupid and bloody, because that's what we do so well. We talk so negatively to us. You would never talk to your worst enemy in the way you talk to yourself. And it's those kind of things, by addressing those kind of thought patterns, those kind of habits, the habit of putting yourself down, by addressing that, questioning yourself and say, are you really such a bad man? And The short answer is probably not. Okay. And it's those kind of things. So by you making conscious decisions, living intentional, and getting off the rat race to stop and think, and more importantly, feel, get used to feeling your emotions, whatever they are. They can be good, can be bad, but experience them, taste them, say, okay, hello, and get to know them. So next time something washes over you, you think, oh my God, what's that? No, you actually think, oh, hello, anxiety. Nice to see you again. So what do you want to tell me? okay. And it's, you know, that is our privilege, the privilege of choice, the privilege of living intentionally.
Quick question for you. So when you talk about like that negative self-deprecating, you know, thoughts, those conversations we have internally with ourselves, what are a couple resources that, you know, if you saw me and you're like, Mike, you're really struggling with this, I can, you know, I can see it from what you're going through. What would you recommend that I dig into, whether it be like, you know, articles, a podcast, a book? What resources would you direct me to help me with that?
Your own power. You have got 10 resources here in your hands, literally on the end of your hands, your fingers. And I want you to take 3 of them and put a pen in there and start writing your thoughts down. I think journaling and writing things down are an amazingly powerful tool that are so underutilized. Try not to use the computer, although I think it is for some people it works better, because especially when your thoughts are racing, you probably are faster in writing. But having said that, on the flip side, you writing by hand will slow your thinking down. And one way or the other, you're putting things in writing. You're putting emotions, which are waves of neurochemicals, you're putting them into writing. And there were so many times that I wrote something down in anger. And as I was writing it down, I was reading it and I thought, oh, that's a whole lot of BS. You catch yourself out, by actually defining a problem. And by writing things down, your brain might like in this case, say, no, that's actually not true, is it? Or it might say, well, it's actually true, but here is a solution for it. So your brain knows so much already. If we just ask for the right question, not why me? Well, guess what? You get 20 reasons why you. If you say, well, how can I get out of this mess? How can I be a better father? Wow. Suddenly you get 20 ways of becoming a better father. So it's all about the questions, but I think you actually stopping, slowing down and writing things down. Now that is a huge starting point, because that gives you a sort of a summary a bit of what is going on right now in the forefront of your mind. And if you do that a little while, make that a habit every day, 5 minutes, then patterns will appear and you can start addressing them. Many a times in my experience, the biggest breakthroughs I had was speaking to others. The reading is so beautiful. Yes, there are so many books out there, including mine. Both of them here. I'm getting mixed up with my hands. Depression, Lied to Me, Steps to Sobriety, and a number of others that I've written. They are quite cool. They might make you think. They might be a start, but it's really you spelling things out and someone else who has got your best interest in mind and maybe has some skills that you don't have, is reflecting back to you and giving you opportunities to rethink, refeel, and explore a different avenue, maybe that gets you around an obstacle that you had previously not seen. Because if you're still standing in front of that obstacle and only say, well, how do I get around it? You might be too close to that obstacle. And by someone actually saying, come on, come a bit back. Did you actually see that there's a path over there? Okay. You know, it's as simple as that. So I think you being able to define a problem or define a challenge that is in your life, that is number one. Then B is, create a power team that helps you to be most efficient to deal with this problem. Why do you want to reinvent the wheel yourself? Do you really want to do Flint until you get a fire? Or, you know, maybe there are better more efficient ways to go there. So I strongly believe in surrounding yourself and learning from others, to move forward, because you've got a finite amount of seconds on this earth. And I want you to create habits that extend your health span and your lifespan. I want you to create habits that create a stronger, more resilient, more beautiful version of yourself, regardless where you are now, regardless what your past has been. Chances are you listening to our podcast and us rabbiting on here about changing your life, it probably is a giveaway that things are not right in your own life. And with that, I want to congratulate you, because you've already taken action. You've come here to that place. You've listened to us. Now that is powerful. You've taken action. Wow. So you are now at a point where you have got a bow and arrow and you have pulled back the string. The tension is there. You're so uncomfortable with your life that this tension is all the way there. You just need to know where to aim your arrow now. And for that, you need help. But there is help out there. That's the lie that I have so long believed. No, there's no help there. No one is as bad no one could ever imagine how bad I feel, what I have done, the shame, the guilt, that all that rubbish. No.
Yeah, it's one of those of we can be our own worst enemies, both in our self-talk and our perception of where we're at and who we are. Well, my friend, you and I could continue to go on. There's not a question on that one. But let us know, how can guys get in touch with you outside of this podcast?
Mm-hmm. essentially the nefinspiration.com is probably a good start. My steps to sobriety.com. My focus was previously on sobriety, but I'm growing, just as much as I wish all of you do the same. So sobriety was for me the starting point, but nowadays I live a very different life where really the addiction and the sobriety, yeah, they're quite nice, but I'm far more interested in being a different man. So I have continued to grow. I've become a breath coach. I'm just becoming a flexibility coach. Now, for all of you who know me, I'm as stiff as a brick nowadays. When I was 20, different story, but nowadays stiff as a brick. And here I'm going for a flexibility coach. Okay. So if a goal doesn't scare you, then it's probably not worthwhile going after. Okay. So here you go. So I am growing, and that is the NEF inspiration part. So if I can change my life, then I want to show you what I do, how I go about it. I've started training in functional medicine, in addition to being an anesthetist. So I'm just learning so much more about this beautiful human body and the web that combines our spirit, our soul, our body, the energy that flies through us, all that. It's a beautiful journey. So I'm growing. So nefinspiration.com is a good place as my website, but otherwise nefinspiration is the handle for all the social media. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on everywhere, either as Stefan Neff or as Neff Inspiration. So yes, come along for a ride. What have you got to lose? It's just, you know, let's be the best versions of ourselves.
Well, my friend, thank you so much for sharing like how our thoughts and beliefs that we're alone, that, you know, there's nobody else that's going through what we're going through can create this fallacy that puts us on the wrong path, that there is a way to work through those lies to build true beliefs that put us on the best path possible. And, man, it's not about just doing it like, you know, overnight, but it's a process of unwinding and getting to the core and continuing to push just like you have and continue to do. Mm. So my friend, I appreciate you joining, sharing your story, your insights and inspiration. So thank you very much, my friend.
It was an absolute honor to be part of your show. And guys, whilst you're here, go down there to the description of the show, press the like and subscribe, because Mike's show is superb. He has got fantastic guests on. So don't be silly. So make sure that you tell your friends and leave a comment down there. Okay.
Thank you, my friend.
Thanks so much, my friend, for joining me on another episode. If you found the information within the show helpful, please leave a review on the platform you're listening to. It helps raise the show's visibility so other men can join us in breaking free. See you on the next episode, and remember to continue putting yourself out there. Have a great one.